Welcome to the Quotable Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Dent. In the studio with us today is Andrew Creasis, VP of Global Sales Operations at Nielsen. Andrew has been successful in enabling commercial efficiency and effectiveness in over 50 countries and enabled sales transformation focusing on people, process, and technology. He also initiated the enterprise sales process by successfully deploying CRM technology throughout the organization. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you here. So can we start off first by telling us a little bit about what you do at Nielsen?
Sure. So I lead global sales operations at Nielsen, which is a function focused on driving our sales efficiency, effectiveness, and predictability. And then also a big component of our sales operations is more recently sales enablement. So really activating our sales teams, making them more successful every day.
Great. And can you give us a little bit of background on how you made your way to Nielsen?
Yeah, that's a fun one. So I started at GE Aviation, so very much a operations process-minded person, but was building jet engines, so something very different than Nielsen, and got connected to someone who used to work at GE, who ultimately went to Nielsen and one day kind of been my mentor for a few years and convinced me to take a look at Nielsen. And I think my first response was, I have no idea what Nielsen even does, because I was drinking the Kool-Aid at the time, but said, let's go for it. And so got an opportunity to meet with some of the leadership at Nielsen and was really impressed by the caliber of the talent and the type of data they were working on. And I thought that was really interesting. And so jumped on board for a role that took me international. And so lived in Dubai and traveled across the Middle East and Africa and really just expanded my horizons. And so kind of never turned back ever since.
Wow, that's great. So for those who don't know about Nielsen on the phone, what does Nielsen do?
As a company, two big components that are strategically actually going through a realignment as two public companies. But as a whole, we focus on measurement, data and measurement. And so two aspects. One is around the media business. So if you think about TV ratings or the latest, you know, show on Netflix, what the value of that show and the advertising surrounding it is worth. The second half of the Nielsen business, the one that I actually focus on, is the Connect business, which is all about retail measurement. So we look at specifically consumer packaged goods. So the world of manufacturers like Kraft, P&G, Coke, Unilever, those types of companies that typically you might go buy a product when you go to the grocery store or online. We are aggregating all that data globally, measuring market share globally, and then also servicing and providing lots of analytics and intelligent aspects on top of that for the customers.
Great. So it sounds like you have two different customer bases then between the two business units?
Yep, exactly.
Can you go into that a little bit more detail about your different customer bases?
Yeah. So the media customer base is a mix of both stations, you can imagine, or content producers, as well as then advertisers. So in many ways, the Nielsen ratings acts like a currency that's traded back and forth across both companies that are developing content as well as those consuming it or spending on that channel. So that's kind of the media landscape, a little more complex. Then on the retail side, we have manufacturers who are, again, producing the products that you'd see in the store every day, whether it's chocolate or, you know, personal care. And then we also have retailers. So the companies that are essentially selling those to you when you go shop, both we interact with very closely, and we actually create a collaboration between manufacturers and retailers that's creating a lot of value. So there's this kind of ecosystem in the retail world that partakes in what Nielsen does.
So do you have separate sales teams then for this as well, or do your sales teams span across both business units?
Yeah, we've got separate sales teams. There was some cross-selling for a certain period of certain products that leverage common data sets. So depending on what types of analytical models, sometimes we'll pull in the full 360 of what you're buying in store, you know, what advertising are you seeing, and did that drive a purchase behavior for something within a retail store. But as far as the majority of the sales teams are separate, and then on the Connect retail side of it, we focus our sales teams within various personas. So when we think about a customer or a client, we don't just have a generic sales team that is selling into the account. We actually go one level deeper. And this is part of our strategy that we've developed over the last year, which is to look at personas, different types of people, different types of buyers, whether it's your CIO, CTO framework, or it's maybe the marketing side, or it's the sales team. We're trying to segment and get a little more specific in that approach.
Can you talk a little bit more about the new strategy that you mentioned?
Yeah. So something that we're really excited about is kind of the development of our persona-based sales teams. So historically, we had sales teams that I'd say were more generic across multiple accounts, sold a wide variety of products. And so we had a lot of generalists, which is great initially. But once, as Nielsen continued to expand over time, became really hard to juggle, you know, hundreds of products and to know all the details. So we started to create specialists who would sell into various buying personas. And I think that's a big shift for Nielsen when we've transitioned away from just a typical selling process to a buying process. And so we want our reps to be thinking about that. And we're also aligning the people in the sales organization to fit in with those buyers. So they get really good if you're in the persona of technology. As a sales engineer or selling into technology, you're going to get really good at how to sell into a CIO and CTO. If we're selling into a marketing team, we're going to have a group that's dedicated to selling into marketing or insights individuals who really understand the data and can go deep with them. So that kind of specialization within a customer base has really helped us out in the last year.
So what types of results have you seen from that? Because it sounds very similar to how we sell at Salesforce. So I'd love to hear how you guys have seen results over this new persona-based selling.
Yeah, so we've definitely seen a strong uptick in the number of opportunities we're generating. So the amount of leads we're getting back and the number of doors that are opening. Historically, we were somewhat limited to what I'll call the wallet of kind of one persona within the buyer. By opening up to those other personas within the customer, we're gaining access to more wallets and we're seeing a growth in a lot of our penetration. So we're selling in more products and a pretty healthy uptick in conversion rate from a deal win standpoint. So a few percent here and there goes a long ways for the bottom line.
Absolutely. And would you say that's a mix of growing your existing relationships and creating new ones?
Yep, definitely a mix. Yeah, I'd say healthy portion of our company is focused, and in the past, much more of it was focused on growing existing relationships. What we've also done in the last 2 years is really made a push for going beyond and giving more dedication to new business, so completely new customers. And part of that has come with improvements in process as well as technology.
Great. So have you guys explored any new strategies there as well, or just tools and processes?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. From a strategy standpoint, we definitely have brought in some new components. One is around our org strategy and how we're kind of targeting. And so we've done that by creating inside sales teams. And as I mentioned, the sales specialists around our personas. So the complement of those two, the inside sales has really helped grow a lot of our long tail. It's a lot of our newer clients, medium to smaller size accounts. And that structure has created some efficiencies where we have people who are scaling out across a large number of accounts, can gain efficiency in some of those reply rates and meeting rates. And that's definitely helped grab some of those new accounts that historically we just wouldn't have had the capacity to. So strategy-wise, it's kind of helping our total growth plan. It's also high growth. We're getting a lot of growth as a company globally from new accounts. And so it's an area that we're going to continue kind of to push more and more on in 2020.
Nice. So you guys have the new inside sales teams. What about the other sales teams you guys have? Do you guys have an enterprise team, other market segments that you sell to?
Yeah. So we've got a few other segments. One similar, as you mentioned, to enterprise, we called our global national accounts. So large manufacturers could be the likes of P&G or Coke. We have dedicated teams that essentially target and work with those accounts. And they have dedication of individuals, but also annual reviews and cadences and content and analytics and even people on site that support them. So combination of both salespeople as well as insights, or we call our client success individuals on site.
And are you guys doing anything in particular to keep these different groups of salespeople happy?
Yes, that's a fun question. If you're going to have that conversation, you have to certainly talk incentives, which is, I feel like, what I've been living the last year. I've got a few people on my team who are really deep in this, and we're rolling out a new incentive plan at Nielsen. So this has been kind of a long process coming. And historically, actually, in Nielsen, we didn't have the structure that I described earlier, and we didn't have incentive structures in the way that they need to be, both competitive for the marketplace as well as competitive for the individual. So first off, having the right sales incentive plan is critical. Having one that they can directly correlate their contributions, but also a team contribution is really important. From a cultural standpoint, Neil, so we want to have both. It's not just the individual. It's actually about working together, because a lot of our deals take multiple people in the room to close a deal. And I know there's some great stats out there about, you know, it's 5.4 decision makers to actually get a deal closed as a customer. So tells us that we want to have that team component. So sales incentive, that's been a really important way to kind of drive the growth and retainment from sales individuals. The second one is around culture. I mean, culture is king. So by having the right, you know, engagement, flexibility, support from the business leaders, the team wants to win. And I think that's really important. And it's different than, I would say, historically, where we didn't always have sales teams. So it's this culture of kind of we're new at this in a way, even though we're a company that's been around for 90 years, we haven't had the structure of inside sales and sales ops to support them and persona-based sales. So it's kind of this, we feel like new kids on the block kind of culture, which is exciting. And it's, you know, driving some really good rewards, but also strong satisfaction from the sales teams.
That's great. So what's the biggest challenge that you face in growing revenue at Nielsen in your role?
Yeah. So within my world of sales operations, I've got a lot of challenges. And I would say scaling our sales model faster. I'm really confident in our strategy that we've put together the right people model. We're developing the right processes and enhancing them, you know, automating them with things like CPQ, contract management systems, CRM systems, marketing automation. So we've got processes there. We've got the technologies built, but it's just scaling it and training the organizations and kind of taking us to that next level. So for me, that's the biggest challenge is getting the model out there faster so that we can drive the revenue. We've proven, you know, the business case, which is really important as a sales ops person. You're constantly trying to prove your business case, the team's business case, and the ROI you can generate. That's there. And so my biggest undertaking now, having proven that, is how can we scale that across 100 countries? And I know that's a, you know, a 3-year plan. How could I do it in 12 months?
Wow.
So that's my challenge.
Yeah. So I kind of want to dig into that a little bit deeper because Nielsen, you said you guys used to not have a sales team. And now your biggest challenge is figuring out how to grow it and expand it across the world. What has that time frame looked like from the inception and now your role and all the different sales teams that you guys are rolling out? What has that time frame looked like?
Yeah. So we started on this journey within a few countries, within a few specific countries in Europe and North America. I would say about 2 years, almost 3 years back. And we proved out essentially that case over the last 2 years, how to create sales teams, both how to incentivize them, how to bring about the right technology and processes to support them. And so as we've kind of proven that business case and taken them from, you know, completely new to a little more advanced as modern sales, that was a few years in the making. Now that we've got that business case, that model, we're going from call it maybe 15 or 20 countries to 100 countries. And the goal is to do that in 12 months. Again, it's something that would typically take probably 2 to 3 years, but we're going to try to make that big push in a big way next year. But we do know from a culture standpoint, it changes. You're bringing about new roles, new processes. It takes time to adopt. So we do have an eye for a long 3-year, you know, long-term process of investment. And we'll continue to support the individuals with training, you know, incremental technologies here and there, but make a big push in 2020.
Great. So that template is what allows for you guys to scale quicker. What's included in that? You talked a little bit about the tools that you have in place. What else are you guys using or have you changed at Nielsen that allows for you to scale so quickly?
Yeah, so a few things. We've got a sales operations council globally that our president is the chair of, which I think above and beyond has done the most to make this happen, both from a budget support, but also driving the change with the top. So that's given me a lot of capability and flexibility to drive this change faster than we would have without that support. So a council that comes together, that's sharing knowledge, that's challenging one another and helping develop kind of our strategy and playbook has been really important. The second thing has been developing a champion network. So we have sales ops champions across the globe. So we've done that informally, but then now as we formalize the roles and roll out this organization globally, we're now fully recruiting internal and external. But having a champion network helps you get something off the ground fast before you have, you know, the official green light with X, you know, millions in funding or whatever you're looking for. So we did that informally to get us going. And that kind of helped us move along the path faster. And then as far as the how to convince the organization of this, I think the business case is critical. So having a strong business case that is yours, not necessarily an external business case, but yours that you've proven out or piloted, helps get the buy-in from a lot of the leaders so that they're more willing to reorganize, restructure, and take on some of those technologies or processes that you're rolling out.
Wonderful. That sounds a lot like what your salespeople need to do. You need to get the right stakeholders involved, make sure they're championing for the change that you're trying to produce.
Yep, for sure.
So we know that the media industry is going through a lot of changes. I think we can all see that just as consumers. How are you guys taking advantage of that? What's most important to you as we see the media industry growing and changing so rapidly?
Yeah. So the way that we think of it from a Nielsen standpoint is that it's opportunity. There's been a huge increase in fragmentation, meaning, you know, we're across so many more platforms than ever before, so many different types of user or consumer groups, which has provided more and more reason for the marketplace to need a steward of all that data. So one company to pull it all together and give a standard currency. So I think in many ways, Nielsen's positioned really well for all those changes in the industry, and then also positioned to grow. from a media standpoint, we only have a footprint in, I think, about 20 to 30 markets that we're active in some sort of engagement. So there's a lot of opportunity to grow internationally, to partner with local organizations, and to help become that currency that kind of creates that, you know, equal, fair playing ground where it's known what the ratings are and what the view is of the business, so you can properly adjust your media landscape. So I think it's positive, a lot of opportunity there.
And because you guys have been in this business forever, do you feel like that's an advantage?
Yeah, I think the history of Nielsen and the track record is definitely an advantage. Understanding how to do this at scale, to create a currency, to be fair, and also to act with integrity. I think it's really critical because our customers don't look at us just for the data, but they're looking for that we're going to hold to the data, that we're going to deliver quality data. And, you know, integrity and quality comes with time. So I think that does help us.
And as far as the importance of analytics in the day-to-day business, I would imagine it's pretty high, right?
Yeah. You know, I'll kind of talk from a Nielsen standpoint, and then I'll talk from a sales ops standpoint. From a Nielsen standpoint, it's built into, you know, our products, everything that our commercial teams do, our operations delivery teams do, tons of data that's being analyzed both for the customers, but also internally. And so we've got some of the best data scientists in the world and large teams in that regard. From a sales operations standpoint, as we're creating this sales organization and creating the sales ops and enablement structure globally, one thing that we definitely found interesting is that we hadn't been using a lot of data on our sales process or lack of a formal process historically. So there was kind of this white space to begin to do much more advanced pipeline management, you know, better forecasting, better insights on the front of funnel. So that's kind of been a white space for us to go deeper in. And yeah, we're loving being able to take advantage of some of the experts around the business, getting input here and there and kind of diving into the data.
Wonderful. So we know that the media industry is changing. Can you walk us through some of those changes that you guys are seeing from a Nielsen perspective?
Yeah, huge change in fragmentation. So more and more people are going to more and more platforms, channels to consume information. So both a technology shift as well as a consumer shift are completely remodeling the media landscape. So as a result, Nielsen is needing to cover all those different channels. The good news that provides us with a lot of opportunity, and the way I think of it is this transformation that's underway means we need someone who's able to pull together all of the data, pull together kind of single source of truth and be that currency for the media industry. So that has been a big shift. Now, those are going to continue to evolve. So Nielsen will need to be, you know, investing in the right channels, investing in those right avenues as things like, you know, amateur content becomes more and more popular, not just large production companies. There's got to be ways to cover that or, you know, incremental content curation or different privacy and security issues that come with data as we're capturing data on what people are viewing or consuming online or on your tablet or on your phone. All that is bringing different dynamics that are making it more complex, definitely more challenging, but at the same time, more critical to have a trusted partner in the media industry who can be that quality metric, that central data point for all the players to take part in.
Andrew, I heard you mention the term currency. What does that mean in your world?
So media landscape essentially is measuring what is the viewership of content, whether that's your traditional cable box or it's online or it's your latest binge show that you're watching on your iPad or anywhere. So that viewership translates and is converted into ratings that essentially represent how much, what percent viewed this show or piece of content relative to the rest of the universe. And that creates a value. What's associated to that eventually is a dollar amount that represents a certain value. Obviously, the more people watching, if you think about like the Super Bowl as a big televised event, that means the minutes or seconds of advertising while that show is airing are worth more. And so that amount of time and a metric behind it eventually gets translated back and forth and gets sold, which becomes in many ways a currency. So you're paying more for premium, you know, minutes or seconds on an advertising overlaid on a TV show than you would if it was, you know, less popular. And so in many ways, it acts like a currency and it's transacted across multiple agencies, advertisers, manufacturers, as well as content creators.
Andrew, from a sales perspective, what are you most excited about?
Yeah, sure. I think an area that's exciting for me that we've been focusing on is getting a lot smarter about our sales funnel. We've got a 7-stage sales process. And what we've, I think, under-focused in the past has been those early stages. I think traditionally, there's been a lot of focus on things like proposing and negotiating and really getting smart about that back end of the funnel, where we have opportunities in the front of the funnel, and both from a process, but also technology. And I think I've just seen an explosion in technologies in that space. Companies that help generate leads, companies that help bring in or mine or add contact information, and then even companies that help with sourcing networking information. So if you think of companies like LinkedIn, Sales Navigator, something that we've used a lot recently, it's really helped us to discover those personas that I was talking about before. So who are the different buying groups within a company? That's really helped us kind of integrate. And so we've got our Salesforce platform really nicely integrated to LinkedIn. And then we're also leveraging a front of funnel technology called SalesLoft, which helps those inside sales teams. And that allows them to run really scaled but personalized cadences in a way that if I flash back 2 years, we just couldn't do or didn't have the capability at the time. So that for me has been the most exciting aspect from a sales ops standpoint, is really seeing the return, the ROI, because it's a great story and picture once you develop it. But it's also a lot of fun to really turn on the lights and really get that front of funnel going.
Andrew, thanks so much for being here with us today. And thanks to everyone for listening. Through Nielsen's sales transformation, we hope you've learned how Nielsen is taking advantage of change in the media industry and creating new opportunities by focusing on the buyer process, creating a process that scales, and keeping sales happy with new incentive plans. For more insights and inspiration, visit quotable.com and stay up to date by subscribing to our biweekly newsletter. I'm Kaylee Dent, and I'll catch y'all on the next podcast.